This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Hello, my name's Dan. This is another episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. And actually, we're not just any old podcast now. No. We're an award-winning podcast now. Just about. You see, we won a bronze prize the other day in the British Podcast Awards, which means we're kind of one of the best podcasts in the country. Well, I'm not sure about that. What I do know, though, is that we're the only podcast, really, that lets you explore the entire universe and gets you back home in about half an hour. Now, this week, we'll talk about how your body, trying to save itself, could end up actually killing you. We'll also learn about another new robot that's exploring Mars. Another new robot, very quickly. It feels like every week on the show I'm talking about another robot that's exploring Mars that they're sending up there. Have they not found everything already? I mean, come on, guys. If it takes me, like, about an hour to clear all the rubbish and the clothes off my bedroom floor when my mum asks, I'm sure that it should take NASA just a little bit more time than that to explore a whole planet, maybe. Okay, we'll learn about that anyway, and we'll also find out why global sea levels might be rising quicker than expected, which isn't good news. I'll say hello to you as well. I'll answer some of your questions in a sec. First, let's catch up with our favourite genius here on the Science Weekly. This is Professor Hallux.
Hallux's Hydration Help Desk. Call accepted.
Hello, Professor. I keep forgetting to drink enough water. Got any tips to help me out?
Of course. Firstly, let's have a reminder of the targets, Nanobot.
Well, if you're between 4 and 8 years old, you should be having 4 to 6 glasses of water every day. If you're older, then it's 6 to 8 glasses.
Thanks, Nanobot. It sounds like a lot, but there's plenty of ways to get your fill. Have cereal at breakfast instead of toast and jam. All that lovely milk counts towards your target. It's also a good idea to get in the habit of having a glass of water with your breakfast, even if you're eating cereal. Scientists have found that most children are dehydrated at the start of the day, so get off on the right foot and you'll find you're able to concentrate better in class.
And don't forget your water bottle when you go to school. If it's permitted, swap yours for a larger one, or even take 2 on hot days.
Water bottles aren't just for school. Wherever you go, it's a good idea to have a drink to hand. It also means you won't have to pay for one if you get thirsty. If your water bottle is a bit boring, why not get one with cool characters on or a nice jazzy pattern for other times? You could even start a trend and customise your own. If it's the taste that's putting you off, or the lack of taste, why not add some soft fruit into your bottle or some mint leaves for a cool, fresh taste?
Minty water sounds out of this world. I've got another out of this world factoid for you if you're interested, Hallux.
Always wow me with your water wisdom.
You might think that astronauts up in space don't have many drinks to choose from. After all, there aren't any shops. But you'd be wrong. Now, whilst they can't fill up a cup, in zero gravity their drink would just float away, they can drink from sachets, and that includes tea and coffee, milk, and even soft drinks like cola. Usually, the flavoured parts are freeze-dried and water is squirted in.
And check this out, all of the water on board the International Space Station is made by recycling. And yes, that means the water the astronauts pass in the toilet. Of course, it might sound a bit yucky, but recycling water is something that's interesting to scientists back on Earth too. After all, no one wants to run out.
Hallux's Hydration Help Desk, with support from the Children's Health Fund. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
Right, let's answer some of your science-y questions then. If you've got something rattling around your brain that you really need to figure out the answer to, hit me up. I will sort it out for you. Either I'll find a proper genius to come on here and tell us the answer, or I'll do all the research myself and I'll explain it to you. You just need to let me know what the question is as a review over on Apple Podcasts. Dogs for Life 7072 from Australia has done that. Hello, dogs. Thanks for getting in touch. You ask, why do we close our eyes when we sneeze? Well, very quickly, before we get into this, did you know that when you sneeze, you fire out 5,000 drops of mucus straight into the air at speeds of up to 100 miles an hour. Which means, more often than not, your sneezes are travelling faster than an actual car. Now, scientists aren't exactly sure why we do this. There are a few reasons. They think maybe it's a reflex, like, you know, when your knee jerks after you've tapped it. It may be to shut your eyes to keep all the germs that you're sneezing out of them. Or maybe scientists think it's because the muscles that are behind your eyes tighten when you're having this reflex. They're still not sure, though. It's kind of a mystery, but those are the best options, dogs. Thanks for getting in touch. Also, hello to Phoebe and Oscar in Houston, Texas. I love that about this part of the show. I get to find out where you're listening. It's completely other ends of the world. We're going from Australia to America, but we're still staying with bodily functions. They ask, why do we yawn? Now, again, scientists aren't exactly sure about this either, Phoebe and Oscar, but they think it's to do with getting more oxygen into our bodies. That's the idea. You see, when we're bored or when we're tired, we don't breathe. We don't breathe as deeply as we should. So we need more oxygen in our blood to move the carbon dioxide out of the blood so we can carry on living, so we breathe more deeply because of that. But again, we're not entirely sure. Thanks for the question anyway. If you've got something sciencey rattling around your brain that you really want an answer to, and if you'd love a shout out on the show as well, you need to leave it as a review for us over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, scientists have uncovered the secret of good chocolate, why it's good. And they've done it by studying a 140-year-old mixing technique. Now, Professor Wilson Poon from the University of Edinburgh led this study, and he can tell us more. Hey, Wilson.
Hello.
Now, Wilson, I think we'd start with why you started. I mean, why are scientists, with everything that they've got going on their mind, focusing on the Big Bang of chocolate? Why were you investigating this?
Well, I'm actually a professor of goo. In other words, I'm paid to study all forms of goo, from plasticine to paint to mayonnaise to, you know, anything that, basically, the sort of things that turn adults back into kids, because we can make a mess of it everywhere. And molten chocolate is obviously a form of goo. So it really is true. One day I met a chocolate scientist at a conference on goo that I was running, and we got talking, and I realized that I can apply some of the techniques that I use to study all forms of goo to study molten chocolate.
Very quickly, Wilson, before we move on with chocolate, you studying goo, you mentioned loads of different types there. Why are gooey things gooey, if you can sum that up for us? Why are they not, you know, thin and fast flowing like water? Why are they not completely solid like hard glue? Why are they gooey, very simply?
Oh, goo is goo because they're all liquids with bits in the liquid. So the easiest example is paint. So paint has colour in it because they're pigment particles. So it's not just the water, which is a simple liquid that flows the way we expect liquids to flow, but it has got bits of pigment and bits of other things in it that mix for the colour, as well as the special flow properties such as non-drip.
Okay.
So any liquid with bits in it will be gooey.
And let's move this back to chocolate then, if we can. So where did you start with your experiment? Obviously, a master of looking at different forms of goo, you must know where to begin looking. How did you do that with chocolate?
Oh, well, my favourite form of looking actually is, amazingly, looking. In other words, by visually imaging them using various forms of microscopy. So as with many other kinds of goo I study, I started with chocolate by getting my very talented team of researchers started looking at chocolate in molten form under a microscope.
And then what did you find? So, I mean, it says that I've read that this is a 140-year-old mixing technique that you studied. How has it developed in that 140 years? What did you find by looking at chocolate closely?
Well, in fact, looking at it under the microscope didn't tell us an awful lot. But what we started doing is beating the stuff up. The posh scientific word of that is rheology. Rheology is the science of studying how goo deforms when you apply force to it. And so we have special machines called rheometers, where we can apply quite controlled kinds of forces to the molten chocolate. And through studying how they flow and how changing the recipe of the chocolate a little bit how it affects, how it flows, we've started to understand why Mr. Lynch developed this process called conching 140 years ago.
Conching, it's a word that I've never heard before in science, Wilson. Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Well, that makes two of us. I didn't know what it meant either when I first started 7 years ago. So this is the story that I heard, how Mr. Lynch developed it. So before Lynch developed this process called conching, and I'll come back to tell you what it means in a moment, chocolate was very gritty. So when you put it in your mouth, it feels rough, and when it melts, the molten chocolate in a mouth feels gritty. The way you make chocolate is you take a powder, which has got sugar and various other goodies in it, and you mix some melted cocoa butter and oil into it, and you beat it up. And in the old days, they beat it up for a little while, and when it solidifies, it gives this chocolate that melts gritty. But rumour had it that Mr. Lynch once left his mixing machine on for a weekend and forgot to switch it off. When he came back, it turned out that if you beat it up for a very long time, the mixture magically turns into a really smooth flowing chocolate. Now, because Mr. Lynch thought the machine that he used looked like one of these seashells, conch shells, so he called the process conching.
Now, you kind of explained it through that detail there, Wilson. Do you mind just taking us through what is in a bar of chocolate that I eat? So if I were to eat a plain milk bar of chocolate, no frills, no fancy, no caramel, no nougat in there, what is in it? What makes it?
This may well put off you and your listeners eating chocolate, but it's basically sugar and oil with a bit of milk in it. Of course, there is a little bit of cocoa shell and other things, but it's basically sugar and cocoa butter.
And how does that form? You've just spoken to us about conching and how we can get it to be really fine, really smooth. But why, when you put a lot of sugar and oil and some cocoa together, does it stick together like that and is thick and hard enough for us to bite into?
Oh, because the chocolate that as you bite in the supermarket, of course, the oil has solidified. So the cocoa butter at room temperature is a solid fat. So it binds all the sugar crystals together. But magically, cocoa butter melts just above the temperature of the tongue.
Ah, so that's
if you get good, well-made chocolate, it should, as some adverts famously say, melts in the mouth and not in the hand.
So that's quite literally true?
If you make it properly, it depends on what you buy.
Oh, I didn't know that was so accurate.
And of course, it depends on the climate you're living under. I wouldn't guarantee you'll work in the Sahara.
Wilson, as a goo genius, what's your favourite goo?
That is difficult. It depends what it is. I mean, I love these, what do you call this? A silly putty that you can buy in joke shops. You know, this stuff that you can, if you leave it on the table, it kind of goes and flows all the way along the table and make a mess. But if you throw it at the wall, it bounces back at you like a ball.
Now, I tell you what,
silly putty stuff is wonderful fun.
Now, aside from, you know, goo being good to eat or maybe being good to have fun with and spread across a table, are there any instances around the world where goo is useful, maybe useful to us in science?
Well, your listener can go into practically any kitchen or bathroom, and almost every bottle that you see contains goo. So toothpaste, tomato ketchup, mayonnaise, tahini, paint, whether it be painting for the wall or the paint that artists mix up to do paintings at the hanging art galleries, hair gel, shampoo. Yeah, almost anything that is in a bottle that you buy in the home products or personal care section of a supermarket is goo.
I can't. Yeah, it's so amazing that it's around us all the time, and that you even went to a goo conference. I love that. Wilson Poon, Professor Wilson Poon, thank you so much for telling us all about goo and chocolate on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
On the Fun Kids website this week, there's a brand new series all about the Internet of Things. Technomum is going to be telling us all about how your iPad talks to your car, or your house, or your body. Plus, there's a chance to win a nature kit, an Amazon smart speaker, and loads more. Just visit funkidslive.com on your computer, phone, or tablet.
It's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we look at some of the most mean and cruel things in the universe. And this week, it's all about the after effects of what your body sometimes does to actually try and save itself. You see, when you're somewhere that's freezing, like properly freezing, and when you're there for a while, in order to keep your vital organs breathing and beating, your body will slow down the flow of blood to your arms and legs, and it redirects it to places that need it more. And as the blood leaves your limbs, they get colder, and then the fluid in the tissue in your arms and legs can freeze, and they can turn into ice crystals. Then these ice tissues, pretty much, they ruin the cells and the tissue where they're kept. Effectively, it causes gangrene. It kills part of your body. Now, they call it frostbite. And frostbite can turn your fingers, your toes, even whole limbs, whole arms and legs. It can turn them red, brown, and then finally a deathly, charred black. Like they've been burnt to cinders by some strange freezing dragon. Now, at the start, it's quite treatable by getting warm again quickly, but then it can be irreversible. It causes this gangrene, and then things might start to get amputated when they finally die. I mean, that is incredible, isn't it? You know, sometimes you can get so cold that simply to stay alive, your body has to kill off other parts of itself. Let's get a lesson from the smartest school outside of the solar system with Professor Pulsar at Deep Space High.
Deep Space High, spaceports.
Okay, everyone at Deep Space High, I'm ready to transmit my presentation on spaceports. You're gonna love it. Transmitting in 3, 2, 1. Now, as we've seen, space planes look a bit like airplanes and have some things in common, like wings, tail fins and wheels. And like aircraft technology, they are being built using the latest smart materials and technology. Let's find out more. For many years, spacecraft were made out of metal, a good choice because it's strong and robust. And spacecraft need to be strong and robust for safety. After all, they'll be blasting through Earth's atmosphere. Aluminium and titanium have been popular metals to use as they're tough but very light. Weight is critical when building spacecraft, as the heavier they are, the more energy is needed to break free of the Earth's gravitational pull, and that means more fuel and cost. Now, even though these metals are lighter, they can't compete with a very popular new material, carbon composite. Carbon composite is the name given to a range of materials made from combining chemicals together. They're lighter and stronger than some metals and can be more flexible. Carbon composites have been around for a while. The first high-performance carbon fibres were made in 1958 in the US. But it was the Royal Aircraft Establishment at Farnborough here in the UK who developed the production process and patented it. Modern aircraft manufacturers already use a lot of carbon composites in their new generation planes, so it's a logical extension for space planes. Virgin Galactic's White Knight 2 is the largest all-composite plane ever built, using woven fibres of glass graphite and aramid bonded with epoxy resins. Composite technology is making new discoveries all the time. A new type of carbon nanotube promises a dramatic improvement in strength over existing composites, 600 times the strength of steel by weight, compared to 3 or 4 times. Getting down to this nano level, in fact, working with the molecules of materials like this can result in even more amazing new discoveries. Some recent technology developments are creating materials that are not only stronger and lighter, but can instantly heal themselves when punctured, and even be able to feel the forces pressing on them. Just think, you and I can feel the slightest pinprick anywhere on our bodies, as skin contains millions of microscopic nerve endings that carry messages to the brain. Well, materials that make up critical systems on a spacecraft could be embedded with nanometer scale sensors that constantly monitor the material's condition. If a part starts to fail, that is, it feels bad, these sensors could send messages using molecular wires to a central computer before something serious happens. Nanomolecules in the materials could be instructed to react and repair any damage. It's not just the body of the spacecraft which are benefiting from new materials. The way that bulky components like solar panels are made are also changing. New super thin and super light materials could be used as gigantic sails to help provide energy to the craft. They'd weigh less than a sheet of paper. Uh-oh, losing the connection. Catch you next time.
Deep Space High, Spaceport. Support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
It's time for this week's Science in the News, and very briefly, we got some pretty bad news to start. You see, scientists believe that global sea levels could rise far more than predicted due to quicker melting of the glaciers and the ice in Greenland and Antarctica. A new study projects that the world's sea may rise by 2 metres in the next 100 years. Now, that doesn't sound a lot, 2 metres, but seriously, it would destroy the homes, scientists think, of hundreds of millions of people. Also, a 300-kilogram robot is being built to find life on Mars. The Analytical Laboratory Drawer. It's a sophisticated 3-in-1 box of instruments. It will examine rocks to find signs of biology. It's got a drill on it as well that can dig 2 meters into the planet, and it's due to lift off and head to the red planet next year. And finally, a pair of beavers are being released into the wild in the UK because they're thought to do a better job at making flood defences. It's the first time that the animals have been wild in Essex for 400 years. They were introduced to the countryside back in March. And already, in just a couple of months, they've built 7 dams. Now, the place where they are is at risk of flash floods. Happens very quickly. It's already been flooded twice in the last few years, and these beavers, they're trying to save the day and stop it again. And that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. If during the course of our journey around the universe in the last half hour, if you've got a sciencey question that's just popped up that you really need to know the answer to, tell me about it. Either I'll sort out a proper expert in that field, like I'll get a geologist or a physicist or a biologist on the show, or I'll do all the research myself. And I'll explain it to you. You need to tell me what the question is first. You can do that by leaving it as a review over on Apple Podcasts, if that's how you listen to the show. If that is how you listen to the show, by the way, make sure you subscribe so then new episodes of the Fun Kids Science Weekly are downloaded for you every single week. You don't need to press any buttons. That's the same. Subscribe to us wherever you get your shows from. Doesn't matter. They'll pop up instantly. You can also listen to us on the free Fun Kids app. You can find all our brilliant science series on there. You can find them on funkidslive.com too. And Fun Kids, we're a kids radio station in the UK. You can listen to us all over the country on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app. And as always, at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.